Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, January 26th, 2017. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Brad Ring and Betsy Parks from Brew Your Own Magazine join us to talk about their new Big Book of Home Brewing and to share some tips on recipe formulation. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you can get a free, nifty Basic Brewing bottle opener. And don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first and click on our ad on basicbrewing.com on the right-hand side of the page there. It'll take you to Amazon where you can shop as you normally do, and it won't cost you any extra. You won't even notice a difference, but you'll be helping us bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Home Brewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows Phone app. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory. We're on the Stitcher app as well. We're on Google Play Music, and we're on the iHeartRadio app, too. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support, and thanks to everybody who's done so already. I've heard from a few of you who have contributed through the support link and didn't get your email with links to the most recent bonus content. So if you fit into that category, let me know. I'm still getting this email thing worked out, and I greatly appreciate everybody who's gone above and beyond to help support this show. Well, let's look into the mailbag, shall we? Here's something from Norway. It says, I just listened to the Swiss Spruce Porter episode, and I thought that I would enter my comments on brewing with spruce. My name is Rolf. I'm 53, homebrewer, beer geek, and chef. I live in Bergen, west coast of the Norway. But first, Rolf says, thanks a lot for making my favorite beer cast. Well, isn't that nice? I appreciate that, Rolf. In fact, I liked it so much that I started my own here in Norway called Vestcast. We've published 24 episodes so far since the spring of 2015. You can find them at iTunes or at vestcast.no. That's V-E-S-T-K-A-S-T.no. But they're in Norwegian, except for an interview with Stan Hieronymus and one with Steve Hindy. So it kind of leaves me out. Rolf says, me and a friend did some brewing with spruce. We brewed a batch each, and we used only spruce tips. The trick we found out is to pitch the spruce tips in the boil. Boil it for 90 minutes to get a nice flavor and aroma of spruce without being too woody and resiny. The beer was a double IPA, dry hopped with East Kent Goldings, Amarillo, and Citra. We used the Y-East 3726. Rolf says, I think that it is a French farmhouse strain. The beer came out very tasty. The combination of the citrus hops, the slightly fruity character of the yeast, and the earthy and foresty tones from the spruce. So Rolf says, to get anything out of the spruce tips, put them in the boil from the start. We used 160 grams of spruce tips for 20 liters. He says, I still have spruce tips in my freezer, vacuum sealed, of course. So within the next weeks, I'm going to brew up a new batch, this time with an English yeast and lower alcohol. Well, thanks for the tips, Rolf. The tips on tips. I did listen to a couple of minutes of Vestcast, and he's right. It's in Norwegian, or at least what I think is Norwegian. So if you are of that persuasion, check it out at vestcast.no. And thank you very much for the kind comments. On my own home front, my son has a hobby of resurrecting old computers, and he managed to bring back to life an old hard drive that had the ClarisWorks database documents of my original homebrew recipes from 20 years ago. At the bottom of the entry for my first batch, which was fun to look at, it was a Yellow Dog Ale kit from the home brewery. I wrote some tasting notes there. It says, from October 26th, 1996, the boilovers lessened the density of the brew, resulting in a light ale. The flavor was really good after a couple of weeks in the bottle. Surprisingly refreshing, but not much of a kick. I'll have to try this again with a little more experience. So there you go. My first batch was a little bit of a disaster with a lot of wort winding up on the stovetop, but it still turned out to be a very drinkable beer. And I'm going to have to make some of those recipes again, including my award-winning robust porter that I brewed, turns out, 2 decades ago this year. So that'll be a good thing to commemorate. Let's have a word from our sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. If you go to highgravitybrew.com, you'll see listed their seasonal homebrew kits. And this time of year, they're recommending their Emerald Island ESB, Henry's Brown Ale, and Extraordinary Ordinary Bitter. And High Gravity has a lot of flexibility when you're ordering kits through their site. For example, on the Emerald Island ESB, you can choose extract or all grain, whether to have your grains crushed or not. And this particular recipe recommends the Y-Yeast English Special Bitter Yeast, which is part of the Y-Yeast Quarterly Private Collection. But if you don't want that one, there are 5 other yeasts that are listed as recommended alternates, if you so choose. And on that same page, you can order your bottles and caps and priming sugar and clarifier, etc. Desiree and Dave come from an IT background, so it's no surprise that their website is really cool and very flexible. So check it out. Check out the seasonal recipes along with all the awesome electric brewing gear. Check all that out at highgravitybrew.com. Now let's talk to Brew Your Own magazine publisher Brad Ring and editor Betsy Parks about their new big book of homebrewing and pick their brains a bit on formulating our own recipes from scratch. Well, Brad Ring and Betsy Parks, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Well, thank you, James.
Yes.
I'm happy to say, longtime listener, first time caller. Always wanted to say that.
So. I think I've had you on the video podcast, like when we were wandering around HomebrewCon.
That's right.
Yeah, when we were the event formerly known as HomebrewCon now.
Yeah. I think
National Homebrew Conference.
Yeah.
National Homebrew Conference.
It's all in the name. I think we're wandering around club night or something.
No, I think you've grabbed me at a couple of the club nights.
So to speak.
Always hard hitting info on club nights, I'm sure.
Well, you do learn a lot.
Conversations.
You do learn a lot at club night. If you know, I was just talking to Gary Glassy the other day, and if there's any beer style that you ever wanted to try, it's probably going to be there at club night, and there's probably going to be somebody there to tell you how to make it.
That's absolutely true.
So I got in the mail the other day the Brew Your Own Big Book of Homebrewing, all grain and extract brewing, kegging, 50-plus beer recipes, tips and tricks from the pros, and it's a big, beautiful book. Tell me about the book. I mean, where did this concept come from, and what's the focus of the book?
We do get approached from time to time from book publishers to compile, you know, our very vast library of homebrewing information. And I guess we hadn't gone for it until recently. We were approached by an editor at Quarto Publishing, Tom O'Hearn, who had worked with, I'm sure other homebrewers recognize, Denny Kahn and Drew Beecham's experimental homebrewing book. Mm-hmm. And we thought they did a great job with that. And then they also recently released their Homebrew All-Stars. And so we really liked how those books turned out. So we thought, why not give it a try and go for it? So it's been about a year plus project that we're now in, I guess, the media blitz of, but it's a compilation of what we think is our best collection of information from Brew Your Own from over the years.
So, Brad, what is the focus of the book?
Well, you know, as far as the timing, also, it was this all came together right around the same time as our 20th anniversary. So, felt like it was a good way to mark that milestone and pull together, like Betsy said, our best content over the years. And what we were really looking for was, you know, something that would be appealing to really the full spectrum of homebrewing out there right now. So we wanted something in there for the first-time homebrewer that wouldn't be overly intimidated by the book, but certainly plenty of advanced topics as well. And the nice thing about having 20 years of editorial content to sift through is we can really cherry pick what we feel are the key parts that are really integral to making the best beer you can at home, whether it be, you know, different recipes or getting into specific techniques, choosing the right equipment, etc. So we really try to hit all of the major points, as well as doing some deeper diving into you know, some of the key topics that we feel are really important to making the best beer you can.
It's very approachable. It is you know, sort of not intimidating for someone just getting into the hobby for the first time. It's well organized. It's got nice photos too, which is always a good thing. But for experienced homebrewers, I think probably the biggest draw is the recipe section of the book. You've got some clone recipes of commercial beers that, you know, some of which I think I'm gonna try to make because there's a lot of beers that I like a lot. And I'm usually not one for cloning a recipe or cloning a beer, but, you know, some of these, I think I'll take a shot.
I'm glad to hear it.
So what do you?
Yeah, it's great. You know, when with the clones, it's you know, we do a lot of reader surveys with the magazine, and we always ask about, you know, different questions about homebrewing, and specifically on recipes and what sort of recipes our readership is most interested in. And year after year, you know, good quality clone recipes are always at the top of the list. And if anything, with the explosion of more and more great craft beer out there, available commercially, I think that's only fueled the interest in trying to copy at home some of the recipes for beers that you can't easily get, you know, in your neck of the woods.
And even if you can easily get these, like we can get Oscar Blues now here in Northwest Arkansas, which I'm very happy about. But even if you can get the beer, seeing a recipe for that beer and, you know, kind of saying to yourself, oh, that's how they do that, you know, or that, and then, you know, sort of using that as a springboard to put your own twist on these beers that you like so much. You know, you guys have Oscar Blues Old Chub and Tin Fitty, and you got Rogue Dead Guy Ale and Russian River Temptation. You know, and then Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, which is, you know, a standby or a standard for, you know, since the beginning of craft beer, basically. So I want to sort of dive in. You know, I've got you on the line, you know, to help you plug the book, but I want to put you to work too, because, you know, this isn't Dick Cavett. This is a how-to podcast. Let's talk a bit about homebrew recipe design, and you've got a good section on that in here. And it's something that we've talked about over the years, you know, in bits and bytes. But I kind of want to get, you know, the book's philosophy on how to, you know, make a beer from scratch. It's certainly one of the most challenging things of homebrewing, or at least to a new homebrewer. So Betsy, where do we start? How do we, what's our approach?
Well, I'm going on our chapter here, of course. Designing a beer recipe can be a little intimidating, but I'm going to have to lean on the author of a lot of this section, Brad Smith, Beersmith, has given the advice, actually, to start out with the goal of your recipe should be the thing you define strongest before you do anything else. It's sort of like, what did he say, Brad? Like, make a mission statement, you know, and then start from there. So you know what you're doing instead of just pulling ingredients from here and there. So you can start to build from something more defined rather than just sort of scattershot. So I think that's the strength of this section, is encouraging starting from, you know, something solid. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brett, go ahead.
You know, I think it's also, you know, and then following up on that, you know, it's really important then to take the next step of doing the research that you need, whether it be, you know, a specific craft beer you want to clone, and trying to figure out maybe through the website or the label information what ingredients are used and what brewing techniques you can glean from the information that's provided. But also, if you're looking at a specific targeted recipe or a targeted beer style, you know, trying to research that style as best you can, you know, whether it be online or in magazines like Brew Your Own, that have covered styles in depth, and trying to just get that information first and foremost in front of you before you even start thinking about what the ingredient mix is going to be.
Yeah, you can get a couple of recipes of beers that you know that you like. You can start to see how they come together, you know, in terms of ratios and hopping and timing and such.
He says that there are two, he defines two approaches, an artistic approach, which he says is characterized by Randy Mosher's radical brewing, mm-hmm. and a mechanical approach characterized by Ray Daniel's designing great beers. Mm-hmm. But even with the artistic approach, you've got to know, if you're going to build an art car, you still have to know how the engine works, you know?
Sure, sure.
So, you know, you can't just throw together ingredients and expect to make a good beer. So you still have to know about, you know, kind of the structure of how a beer is made, and you still have to kind of know the mechanics of how the fermentables stack up and how the, you know, the flavor and color combinations come together. You know, so you still have to know sort of, you know, some of the mechanics, even if you come from, you know, kind of a right brain versus a left brain kind of approach.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and definitely I come from the more the liberal arts brewer end of things versus the more sciencey side. And what has helped me immensely, I've been homebrewing now for about 22 years, and was helped me immensely more recently in my home brewing has been the brewing software and being able to sort of bring some scientific reality to what I want to pull together and seeing how they interplay, you know, versus the old days of just either winging it or, you know, actually hand crunching numbers in a spreadsheet type format. And now it's you know, thanks to the software packages that are out there now, you know, that really, at least for me, you know, has helped me immensely to help build recipes.
For sure. I mean, I think I still have notepads with scratchings on it of me trying to figure out, you know, how much hops to add, you know, from Ray Daniel's IBU formula from his book, you know.
Sure.
I'm sure a lot of brewers that have been around for a while have the same kind of notes hanging around.
Software is very helpful in that regard.
It is.
So if you're wanting to, let's just say like an English pale ale, what do you think of what's your first step when designing a recipe? What do we got to think about? What are the elements that we have to think about when we're designing, say, an English pale ale?
Well, I mean, the first thing I would think of is try to identify a couple of commercial examples so I can have them in front of me to taste while I'm trying to think about coming up with my recipe. And that seems like a easy first step. And then I would start researching and pulling out, you know, classic styles and doing my research and seeing, you know, what the basic composition of an English pale ale recipe would be.
You know, and looking obviously at specific ingredients, you know, how traditional also do you want to be, and how true to style do you want to be? Yeah. And also what's available to you, you know, at your local homebrew shop, or are you going to broaden it out from there? You know, so obviously with something like a, you know, an English pale ale, you'd be looking at yeast strains that would be particular to that style, your malt bill or extracts would be preferably from, you know, English barley. The hops would be, you know, more typical and traditional, you know, of Fuggles and things like that, that would, you know, be more true to form for that, that sort of beer style. Or do you take it in a different direction, start filling around with it and introduce instead some American hops to it? Again, it's all going to be determined by what your original sort of mission statement or idea for the recipe would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when I think about brewing a beer, it helps for me to kind of dissect it and think about the characteristics of the beer from a statistic wise. I mean, you know, from a statistic standpoint, for instance, the gravity. You know, if you are, say, you know, brewing, say, an English pale ale of, 4% alcohol by volume, then you've got a target of what your original gravity should be. And then you can work on, you know, how much fermentables are you know, that you're going to have to bring together, to make that, you know, that specific gravity. So, you know, you've got to, figure out, you know, using the efficiency numbers of your system and all that, you kind of got to back up and, you know, start thinking about how much base malt you're going to need.
Absolutely. I think another great important step, if you want to brew specifically the style, is to get yourself to the Beer Judge Certification Program website and look at their guidelines, because they will give you the rundown of, you know, what each beer will be specifically in those statistics that you need. So that's definitely an important website for anyone who wants to be style specific in their recipe design.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And one other area, James, that I think a lot of homebrewers tend to overlook, especially if they're looking at something true to style, is the water. You know, and the makeup of the water that they're using, and knowing that, you know, certain styles lend themselves to certain types of water, and being able to, if you really want to nail it, make the adjustments needed and maybe, you know, start with reverse osmosis water and then build the proper kind of profile for your water from that, if you're really looking to be as detailed as possible with what your vision is for this beer.
And then once we have our base malt, we got to think about, and you can make a delicious beer just from base malt. You know, you don't have to add specialty ingredients, but say if you've got a style like an English pale ale, you know, you can probably design a really nice English pale ale with, say, just Maris Otter. To add some more color and some more flavors and maybe some more body, you can jump into specialty grains.
Absolutely. I think another thing mentioned in this chapter that is great for learning to design your own recipes is doing some smash brewing. That's single malt and single hop recipes. You can really get to know the ingredients that you have at hand and how they will behave in a recipe. And I think that's a fun way to experiment with, you know, some of those styles that you can brew very simply.
Yeah, I compare designing beer recipes to designing, you know, food recipes. And if you don't know what oregano tastes like, if you don't know what basil tastes like, and if you're not familiar with the different kinds of onions or things like that, you're going to be kind of hindered in coming up with a good, you know, spaghetti sauce recipe or something like that.
Very true.
So yeah, definitely getting out there, and if your homebrew store will allow you to do it, reach into the grain bin and actually taste, some of these grains in the homebrew shop, and get an experience of what they bring to the beer.
We actually we've started running different live events in the last few months, James, called the Brew Your Own Boot Camps, and Brad Smith does a full day recipe formulation boot camp, and he'll be doing another one I believe on the February 25th out in Santa Rosa, California. But he actually will have plates full of different grains, exactly like what you're saying, where everyone will be, tasting a variety, a pretty broad spectrum of both base and specialty malts, just to try to get that sensory experience, so you can log that away and hopefully use that when you're pulling together recipes in the future.
Of course, boiling those ingredients and combining them with other ingredients and the process of fermentation and things like that are going to, change those flavors a bit. But, having a starting point is certainly helpful in learning how to formulate recipes from scratch. Let's talk about hops. How would you approach figuring out how much hops, where to use the hops, what kind of hops, all that?
Homebrewer's most favorite subject. So much to know about hopping. I mean, hopping can be as simple and as complicated as you want it to be quite honest with you. And like I said, you can do a smash brewing and you can try out all different kinds of hops. Or you can go classic styles where you would, as Brad mentioned earlier, choosing varieties from the country of origin where the recipe or the style comes from. Or you can get experimental, and try out some of these new crazy, things that are constantly coming out of Yakima and other places. There's just, to me, it's just depends on your mission statement, again, what you're trying to achieve.
But there's a mechanical aspect in that if there's a certain, you can go to the Beer Judge Certification Program, the BJCP.org site, and look at, say the IBU levels of a style.
Yeah.
And then you can start looking at the alpha acid content of your hops and start plugging those into, your beer software to match those targets, that will show up there. Give us some guidance from y'all's experience on, you can put different kinds of hops into those calculators and come up with the same IBU level, right? I mean, you can put a little bit of a high alpha acid hop in there, or you can put a lot of a low alpha acid hop in there and get the same, IBU number in the calculator. So if you are targeting hopping to a certain style, how do you figure that out? How do you figure out which hops to put in?
Well, really when it comes down to that, again, I think you got to cycle back to your original vision of what you're looking to achieve here. Because while there's certainly a lot of different, hundreds of different ways to get to the same final IBU target, your choice in getting there and how you get there is going to be dramatically different based, obviously, on the type of beer you want to make. If it's a style, if we're going back to the English pale ale example again, looking at those hops that are traditionally used for those, and certainly that research can be done fairly easily online or in books and magazines. The more earthy traditional UK hops like Fuggles and things like that, but at the same time. How you then use the hops and where you use them in the boil or during hop stands or whirlpooling, based on what you want to get out of it is how it's all going to play out. So, you know, I think you, while I was saying that the recipe calculators and the software has been a incredible help to me personally as a home brewer, you know, at the same time, you've got to know what to plug in there to begin with, as far as maybe what hop varieties to check out. And a lot of that comes with, again, experience as well as research and understanding through smash hop beers that you might make or beers that you try, whether they be from fellow homebrewers or on the commercial side, you know, really getting to know your ingredients as best you can, you know. And you know, whether you're a homebrewer or a pro brewer, you know, knowing how to take some pellets in your hand and do a hop rub and really understand, you know, the characteristics of a given hop. It's something that is, you know, tough to really capture in the pages of a book. It's something that you have to do, you know, in person and really get that sensory library built up about different ingredients.
And we can't, you know, in talking about ingredients, we can't forget, you know, one of, if not the most important, and that's yeast. You know, there are a lot of things that can affect the flavor profile of a beer, but you can certainly take the same wort and split it up and, you know, brew with different yeasts and brew even the same yeast at different temperatures, and you're going to get dramatically different beers, even from that, you know, that same wort. So, you know, yeast is, I mean, obviously there have been books written on it.
Yeah.
But that's a, you know, a very important thing that, you know, novice homebrewers need to think about when they're putting together their first recipes.
Go ahead, Beth.
For homebrewers that the yeast companies have done such a great job, you know, isolating all these different strains for us that, you know, it's pretty, no, it's not like an exacting science, but it's quite easy to choose the right strain for the style that you'd like to brew. So it's not so much guesswork, but it is very fun, as you mentioned, experimenting and seeing what a yeast can do at a different temperature or, you know, in a different setting in some way.
But yeah, playing with your, you know, different yeast styles and making sure that you pitch the right amount of yeast is extremely important as well.
Absolutely. And it's always a good idea if you're brewing anything of significant gravity to have a yeast starter ready ahead of time before brew day. So you have plenty of healthy cells to do the job.
Or be like me and brew on the spur of the moment with enough yeast packets, dry yeast packets.
Yes, sure. I know we do it that way here sometimes too, I have to admit. We do also have a really great yeast strains chart on our own website, and it's easy to find by just going to byo.com/yeast, and that will let you see all of our up-to-date information that we have about all the homebrew yeast strains. And you can also choose to see strains based on quite a few styles, so it's a little bit interactive. So I would point people in that direction.
Cool. And I don't want to slight our extract brewer friends. You can make you know, excellent extract-based beers, and there's a ton of choices out there as far as, you know, what kinds and brands of extracts and you know, the flavor characteristics, the color characteristics, the fermentability. You know, there's also a wide selection of that as an ingredient as well.
Yeah, and just like all other homebrewing ingredients, there's been a lot of great extracts that have come on the market in the last, you know, 5 years, 10 years even, that, you know, that homebrewers can really broaden their horizons. Extract homebrewers, I should say, can broaden their horizons. And there's some really great products out there. And I agree, you can make some really excellent extract beers.
But for those who are all grain brewing, you can use in addition to the ingredients, you can use the actual techniques to modify the characteristics of your beer. So playing with, you know, mash temperature and, you know, perhaps even playing with the mash thickness and you know, using advanced techniques like decoction and things like that, you know, you can also bring to bear, you know, different characteristics into the same recipe.
Sure. I mean, you know, things like the mash temperature and choosing to go through whether infusion or step mashing, all sorts of different techniques, and some can try to, if you're trying to clone something, some folks can try to use some of the same techniques that their favorite craft brewer is using, but it's really, you can impact, as most of your listeners know, quite a bit on the technique side with how the beer turns out in the glass at the end of the day, starting with the same, bill of ingredients, depending on how you want to handle the mash thickness, let's say, or mashing temperature. And, all those have a fairly dramatic impact on the wort that you're going to, unleash on the yeast. So
at the end of it all, when you've got your finished beer, it's probably the funnest part of the process, but one of the most important part of the process is actually sitting down and judging your creation and, actually looking at what you've done with a critical eye, and kind of figuring out where you're on target and where you're off target and where to go the next time, right?
Absolutely. And this is, one of the most fun parts, but also one of the most critical steps in brewing is to get an honest evaluation of what you've made. And it's good. It's very good to learn how to taste and evaluate your own beers so that you can at least know how to make changes on your own, but also, cultivate a group of people that will give you honest feedback. And this is a great job for joining a homebrew club or, at least getting some of your homebrewing friends together so you can try each other's beers.
And being honest.
And honest with yourself as well.
Yeah. It will give you the honest truth. I mean, my mom would probably say they're all great, but they're not.
Yeah, we've all had homebrews that are awesome, and we've had homebrews that need some help, and so.
Yeah.
And you
always get to find someone who's a little more advanced, if possible, is brewing more, has been brewing longer, because they will, they've been doing it longer and they'll give you, more feedback, than maybe someone who's less experienced. But it is just a lot of fun to meet up with homebrewers and see what everybody thinks about each other's beers.
And so let's, there's lots more information in the chapter itself. But I wanted, from y'all's personal experience, I want to close out by kind of asking, what gave you confidence in sort of coming up with recipes on your own or in playing with ingredients in a recipe? I mean, it's intimidating to begin with to get into this thing, but where was the point where you said, "I think I got this," Brad?
I'd say that it had to do with fairly early on, a year or two into my home brewing. Once I got beyond just following a set recipe and wanted to try to start making my own beers and my own vision, I set apart to try to do some experiments, and the first was splitting a batch into 1 gallon increments and adding different yeast strains, and the fact that they all turned out not only drinkable but fairly different and their own types of beer based on the yeast strain really opened my eyes and gave me some confidence to keep experimenting. So it was really through, I think, the door of experimentation and getting to know ingredients that gave me the confidence to begin, really sort of formulating my own recipes. And it's not to say I don't regularly still, follow the recipes that we have in the magazine, but it's also fun to get out there and create something from, just your own brain to begin with.
Betsy, same question.
Similar to Brad, but I would say, it's like the old saying, like, you gotta if you want to make an omelet, you've got to crack a few eggs. I mean, your confidence is really built, and my confidence was built by, you know, just trying and experimenting, you know, getting through my first few batches of beer to even think that I could do it in the first place, you know, and then tweaking recipes with ingredients that maybe weren't on the recipe but are similar. It was a matter of just building my confidence that way. So
yeah, actually getting your hands dirty and
yeah. And you know, and when you say, you know, the feeling that like I've got this, you know, I feel like every time I feel like I've got this, then sometimes I think maybe I don't got this. So just stay humble, you know.
And sometimes the beers make you stay humble.
That's right.
But that's all. But you know, the good thing is there's really, I mean, in my opinion, there's no such thing as a bad homebrew, because even if a batch is horrible, hopefully at least you learn something from it and can take that moving forward to you know, keep making better beer.
Excellent. Yeah, and something we mention a lot in Brew Your Own is to always take notes, and whatever it is you're doing, like good or bad, you can always go back and say, oh, this is what I did. Like either I want to do that again or I don't want to do that again. So that's really helpful. Instead of thinking you're going to remember it, which you probably aren't, take some very good notes if you can.
Yeah, especially if you like to have a couple of beers during the brew day.
Yeah. Yeah, even the tasting portion, you know, write down your tasting notes and what other people say. So it's always good to have a record.
There you go. Well, excellent. Congratulations on the book. It's nicely done. And you know, like I say, there's stuff in there for, you know, for every skill level of home brewer. So congratulations. And we look forward, as always, to the next issue of the magazine.
Thank
well,
you.
Thanks, James. Thanks. I appreciate it. And thanks so much for, you know, over the years being such a supporter of Brew Your Own, and as well as just, you know, incredible source of homebrewing knowledge out there.
Thanks, Brad.
I actually meant that.
I'm thumbsing up over here. You can't see me.
Sincere feeling. No, you do a great job, and it's you know, a lot of homebrewers, including myself, have learned quite a bit from your podcast. So I appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I didn't mean to sound insincere with my thanks. I was trying to sound humble, but you know, I need some more practice with that. they say sincerity is a very important personal trait, and if you can fake that, then you've got it made.
That's good advice.
Thank y'all.
All right, well, take care, James.
Well, thanks again to Brad and Betsy, especially for those super nice comments at the end there, and kudos to Brad Smith, the author of that section. And check out his Beersmith podcast as well. Well put together, very nice, nicely put together book. Boy, those, I'm really excited about those clone recipes in the back. I'm going to have to try one of those Oscar Blues clones myself. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link, where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. You can get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our log books, where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Making Soda at Home, Mastering the Craft of Carbonation, Healthy Recipes You Can Make With or Without a Soda Machine, and Anova Culinary, or is it Culinary, Bluetooth Precision Cooker, 800 watts black. And that's one of those sous vide things that you can just stick in a pot. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.